Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast, a conversation that changes the way you view all relationships, whether married, single, parent, or professional. Discover the relationship secret hidden in plain sight. And now the intersection of theology and psychology. Conversations between pastor
and psychologist.
They are father and son. Your hosts, Emerson and Jonathan Egerich.
Are you ready?
Here we go.
Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast, episode 75, three quarters of the way to 100. I'm Jonathan Egerich, joined here by my father, Emerson Egerich. A couple episodes to go before 2015 is over. Hard to believe when we started in 2014 in the summer that we'd be here a year and a half later on episode 75.
But, it's our jubilee.
Here we are, and it's like, it's exciting, and again, for the indefinite future, we plan on kind of keep plodding ahead with these topics, and we're so appreciative of, to those of you that have been here since the beginning, to those of you that, you know, kind of pick and choose topics or share them with others, or those of you that are joining us for the first time. There's no wrong way of doing this. That's what I love about podcasts. With the ones that I consume, you see topics that interest you, or you see a series of topics that interest you, or, you know, there's just somebody that, you know, no matter what they're, you know, talking about, you're going to listen. I don't know if we meet that category for anybody, but we certainly enjoy doing the podcast. And last week, episode 74, a little bit of a different topic, but again, I'm amazed by some of the emails we got, even from women that were positive about that message. And I think some of them even responding and saying that this is something that they learned a long time ago, or something that they learned over the years, and they're appreciative for the reminder again. Again, if you haven't had a chance to check out episode 74, you can see our episodes at loveandrespectpodcast.com, at the main website, loveandrespect.com, on iTunes, Stitcher, and then again, one of the most popular ways. I think we're nearing 12,000 downloads of the app, but you can get the Love and Respect app as well, and you can. There's ways of seeing that in the show notes. We kind of link to that, but there's other places on the website where you can find out about that if you haven't done so, or just go to your store on your phone or on your Windows or Android device and look for Love and Respect, and our app will pop up. So, episode 75 today, Dad. Or did you want to just comment again on any reflections about the topic last week, or just kind of move forward?
No, I appreciate, again, women, as I indicate, are not mean-spirited. And on that hijacking of things, you know, most wives have fears. There's anger. There's deep care. And so the motivation in these moments where, you know, we talk about a man's need, we're talking about his need for respect, and whammo, you know, there are these, there's a percentage of women that jump on this and immediately, what about us? What about us? What about us? And my only point there, and one of the points I should say, is that it ends up discouraging the male, because he disengages from the social media, doesn't follow on Facebook, because he just feels like, wow, I mean, here we have a moment just to talk about our needs, and now women are saying, well, what about our needs? As though no one knows anything about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, at some level, we just need to see men are not so unsophisticated that they don't understand what's going on here. But instead of engaging it, they don't. They just shut down. And so we end up undermining the very longing and yearning of the woman to be understood by men, because he walked off and he's not going to stay engaged. So I want us to police one another in the healthy sense, to make sure that, you know, we are not undermining the very thing that we're attempting to do, and that's to help men understand women, but also help women understand men, and let these topics sometimes be standalone topics, and let's engage the question rather than jump off on another issue.
And maybe kind of putting you on, you know, the spot here a little bit, but as, you know, again, whether it's social media or online presence, I mean, this occurs in, you know, in kind of real relationships, if you will, as well. Whether it's a small group setting or group setting, I mean, do men, you know, shut down? But I guess in terms of the flip flip side of this, and maybe this is a future podcast episode or something that you've, you know, written on before, as we challenge our particular gender on a topic, where might the topic or focus be if you were going to challenge men in something? I mean, is it in this, you know, why do some men always shut down? I mean, is that kind of, or where would it be? I know you've done something on the grumpy husband and stuff like that we've done before, but is there something that comes to mind that is the flip side to this, even though you're saying women's intent is good in these instances, but the means by which they do it is ineffective?
Well, I think that's an excellent point to make. And I think the challenge to men would be to stay engaged. The guys that are listening to us now and are on Facebook and who are engaged in social media with us, when they see women doing this, just humbly, and this is where you find there are a lot of guys out there that are very wise, they just counter by saying, whoa, time out here. You know, can we focus in on our needs at this moment? You know, Emerson has been addressing the women's needs for the last 3 or 4 blogs. Can we have a standalone opportunity here? Let's stay engaged on our sons. Let's stay engaged on our uncles, our brothers, rather than just kind of having a dismissive attitude and saying, oh, forget it, drop out. I want the men to stay more involved and men struggle more with communicating what they feel. Women are much more natural with words and communicating the affections and the feelings. They just, this is who they are, and they're able to do that and are quite grammatically capable of doing that. But I want to challenge the men to step to the plate a little bit and stay engaged in humility, be understanding, but then try to draw her back in. And again, I think we all need to remind ourselves that truth is not based on our negative experience. Our negative experience is true to us, but that doesn't mean it applies across the board to everybody. And people go global. You know, because of my negative experience, therefore all men are this way or all women are that way. Even in this case where I said some women hijack, there was one gal that just jumped all over this as though we were saying all women. It wasn't saying all women. She didn't read and she didn't pay attention, but it's rooted in her own hurt and pain because of the problems in her own marriage. And I get that, I understand that, but what she needs to do is mature. We're not talking about all people when we're talking about some people. It's a very simple point. If you're not talking about all people but some people, then keep it to the some people that it's true about. But we're not saying that it's the case for everyone. And it's that kind of inattentiveness that I think disillusions a lot of people sometimes, because we can't then get to the point, because now this individual is going off half-cocked on a point that's not even being made. You know, we create straw people and then we blow them over. And it misses the whole point. And I want men to be guarded in that as well. Be reasonable. Keep it to the point. Don't generalize from your own experience. Don't overstate the case. And I think the engagement will be so much more powerful. And, you know, and the people who follow us, I'm very impressed. When we have certain topics, Jonathan, that people get involved in, and they're very articulate, very profound, and it's very exciting. I never quite know when they're going to jump in. But I want to encourage people to continue to engage us. And on the men, don't back out, don't walk away.
And so whether it was last week's episode, episode 74, when we address a man's needs, why do some women hijack the discussion, or all the episodes that I've referenced before, again, we encourage you to check those out, share them with others, and we're so appreciative of you doing so. Today's episode, episode 75, speaking of the topic of straw men or straw person, or maybe creating something where something doesn't exist, episode 75 is titled, Are You Offended by the Inoffensive, or Are You Offended by an Inoffensive Person? Again, are you offended by an inoffensive person, right? And so this is something that I think is always a phrase that I remember you you know, saying over the years, Dad, and I know I even apply with my own clients, because it's a catchy, memorable phrase. I don't know if it came from you or if it came from somebody else, but you've certainly used it. This idea of, you know, do I take up offense where none was intended, right? And that sticks with me, right? And so, in many ways, as all of your other phrases over the years, you know, have stuck with me too. My response is my responsibility, and others, right? And so, I hope this is whether it's this phrase or the title of this or something from this, you know, that's memorable, that kind of puts us in check, you know, when we're having these experiences, whether it's inside of marriage, whether it's inside of parenting, or whether it's in the workplace or social settings. I mean, these things go well beyond the topic of marriage, which we often, you know, focus on. So I'll let you take it away. But again, are you offended by an inoffensive person?
Well, and that was a good recall on your part. In fact, in the writing of the blog, I didn't talk about the fact that, you know, are you offended where there was no offense intended. I didn't use that. Now, I do, now that you said that, I have used that didn't write about that here, but that's the point of this thing. And I mean, when we ask the question, are you offended by an inoffensive person, we'd all say, well, no, of course not. I mean, it would be ridiculous and immature to be offended by an inoffensive person. So there has to be some kind of a little qualification here, because at face value, why would we be offended, you know, by an inoffensive person? I mean, that's like being upset by someone who gives me a gift for $1 million. I mean, you know, why would you be mad at somebody that's not worthy of being mad towards? So the exception here is that, or I should say the qualification is, the person appears unloving and disrespectful. You know, Ephesians 5:33 says a husband must love his wife and a wife must respect her husband. And that's the basis of much of what we talk about in the love and respect topic when it relates to marriage. And we unpack the idea that there are going to be times when your wife appears disrespectful. There are going to be moments when your husband appears unloving. And we want to make the case today that they're not intending to be unloving. They're not intending to be disrespectful. But at that moment, we feel, you know, unloved. We feel disrespected. And if my feelings are the voice of God, you know, that what I feel, God feels, and what God feels, I feel. And so if I feel offended, not only are you offensive, but Almighty God feels the way I feel. I mean, we get a little carried away on some of this stuff, and the point we make is just because I feel offended does not mean, in fact, the other person is offensive. And yet that doesn't minimize the pain or the frustration or the hurt or even the anger that we feel at that moment. And so, you know, we're not being dismissive of our feelings. We're simply saying, are our feelings based on the truth? Are our feelings based on the facts? And we're going to make the point here that there are these moments in our relationships with mom, with Sarah, you know, she's going to come across in a way that feels disrespectful to me. I mean, she mothers me, for instance. She points this out. She's always trying to be helpful. I could technically take up offense, you know, I'm not your son, I'm your husband. I mean, there are a plethora of things that irritate us, that bother us, and we could label that. I could label Sarah's being disrespectful again, being disrespectful. You know what? I'm offended by this disrespect. Well, but it begs the question, was she intending to be disrespectful, or was she actually trying to be loving and helpful? Yeah, it bugs me. I mean, you know, we've been married for 4 decades. And so there will be moments where she's still mothering me, or am I going to grin and say, you know what, this is the nature of her heart. This is who she is, or will I take up offense? And it's that idea that I want to kind of unpack here today.
Well, let me see if I understand kind of what you're saying so far, and I don't know if I'll say this well, but there's this sense that something in this instance, but inside of a marriage, can be hurtful. Something can be frustrating. Something might be angering, meaning something behavioral or whatever, or expectations weren't met, right? This type of thing, or the way that information was imparted to you, it can be hurtful. But the question is, are we taking up offense at intent that didn't occur, right? I mean,
bingo.
So the question is, can you have both and?
Oh, yeah.
Can something be hurtful?
Absolutely.
And painful?
That's why it gets confusing.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, we truly are hurt. We're truly frustrated. We're truly irritated. We're truly annoyed. We're truly angered. You know, when mom, you know, like I'm picking Joy up at the airport, and I have these pair of pants that I just bought that are...
this is real-time information,
Real-time information. And they're flannel, you know, and I really like them. We're in Michigan and everything. She said, make sure you wear your jeans to the airport when you pick up Joy, because she likes those jeans. Those jeans are dressier than these. She didn't like it when I bought these on Amazon Prime. And so, you know, this morning, you know, now, will I take up offense at that? Or is that just Sarah's love? She, you know, it's all rooted in goodwill. It's all rooted in her caring. It's the standard that she has, the expectation. But there, over a period of time, some of us begin to resent the other person because they annoy us, they criticize us, they're complaining, they mother us. I mean, how are we going to interpret these situations? But the point here is, and that's just a superficial little thing, but there are things that people do, and we'll look in just a moment at an illustration. But truly, yes, I want to agree with you. There is true hurt, there is true frustration, there is true anger. I talk a lot of times about hurt, frustration, and anger. They're kind of a triad here that captures a range of emotion. you could put annoyance or irritation maybe there between frustration and anger. But all of that, I want to validate. I mean, it's frustrating. Hey, if I want to wear my flannel pants, you know, rather than the jeans, I mean, I could technically say that's annoying. I'm almost ready to, you know, be buried. I'm getting older here.
I want to be comfortable.
Yeah, I want to be comfortable, and I'm not a 5-year-old. You know, you could create the whole thing in a very negative way, or, you know, we can say this is no big deal, no harm, no foul. It's just, but people end up begin to resent each other because, you know what, this frustrates me, or you irritate me, or you anger me. And technically, if you looked at it, you could say, yeah, it's been going on for years, and you could say it's the same old, same old. And some people make the case against their spouse, whereas other people are grinning at this kind of stuff mm-hmm. because they know truly there is no offense here. Mm-hmm. The person isn't trying to be irritating. They actually care. They love. They're wanting what's best. It's just framed in a totally different way. So technically, we're saying there is no justification for truly being hurt, no justification for truly being frustrated, no justification for truly being angry, but it happens.
But again, when the situation bears out in this sense, when the other person right truly is inoffensive, right? There was no intent behind it, right? I mean, so that's the kind of the first
part
that we're talking about. The second part is, and we're not talking about this today, right? Is there are offensive people out here. We hurt each other willfully.
Hugely
at times,
so.
Right? And so
hugely.
That's a different topic.
That's right.
Right.
And I say at the end of the blog, make sure you don't hijack this blog by saying, well, my husband truly offends me. Or my wife truly offends me. I get that. We're not talking about that today. We're talking about making sure we decode what's really going on here. And we have to determine whether or not this is, in fact, offensive. Let me illustrate it this way. A man's wife has been promoted to manager at the clothing retail store, right? So, and with one of her employees pregnant and wanting to work fewer hours, and another employee wishing to take off a week to go to Israel in a once-in-a-lifetime trip, this wife, the manager, accommodates these two ladies. She will fill in for them, working extra hours herself, despite it being Christmas time. Okay? So, Jonathan, is this a good woman, this manager?
She appears to be so far.
She appears to be. I mean, here's a pregnant woman who, you know, can't stand on her feet as much, and so she's going to try to be a servant there, care for this woman. Hey, there's a once-in-a-lifetime Israel trip, so, you know what? Yeah, I understand. I mean, I'm not going to say no to that, that you got to work and not go to Israel in this special trip. So that's the backdrop. Now, earlier, though, here's more information. Her husband had mentioned to her his desire to go skiing with her in northern Michigan during that time period, leaving the kids with his parents. But now, he discovers, that's not going to happen due to her long hours at the store. Okay, so now, drum roll here. So where's this going to go? Feeling disappointed, he does struggle for a brief time. This is where we get hurt, we get frustrated, we can get angry. I mean, I would be very empathetic toward those sentiments in the guy. I mean, hey, you know, this is looking forward to a romantic time with my wife, skiing, having fun. I mean, and now suddenly that's not going to happen. So there's going to be a level of disappointment. And there was what we call amoral negative emotions, sadness, grief, disappointment. There's nothing immoral about that. That's humanity. We're not robots. We're not mechanically made. We have feelings, okay? But where do we kind of go with all of this? I mean, he looked forward to being with her. However, here's where he made the turn. Knowing his wife's heart, and maybe, you know, an hour or so passed, maybe he got a little grumpy or whatever, but knowing his wife's heart and being familiar with the situation, because she relayed her own frustrations about this, obviously, he did not filter her actions as offensive. There it is. He reminded himself of his wife's predicament and that serving these two fine gals who did have appropriate requests was the right thing to do. He knew his wife did not intend, here's a critical point, did not intend to be indifferent to his concerns, and that he would be out of line to claim that she did not love him, that she did not respect him. In doing that, he would have become the unloving and disrespectful person. So he never took up offense because he decoded that his wife's actions were inoffensive. And interestingly here, his hurt and disappointment was short-lived. He decided that he and his dad would take the two kids and go skiing. Mm-hmm. So does that illustrate what we're talking about?
I think that's a good example. And I think it's a good example that people can, you know, put themselves in, right?
Well, and I think to your point, it's not easy. These things frustrate us. I mean, he was looking forward to a romantic, sexual, perhaps, weekend. I mean, who knows? She's long hours. I mean, he was envisioning all this. I mean, this is a huge disappointment. It would be a huge disappointment to every guy that I know. And so the question is, should he not feel any hurt, frustration, anger? No, I'm not going to go there with it. But what happens is he's got to some point decode.
Yeah. But these are the things that get unpacked over the years in a marriage, right? I mean, again, these are the examples with people, whether they're emailing or whatever, or if you were in counseling with them and they say, this is the 37th time that this has happened, right? She's goodwilled every time this happens, and I'm always seventh on the list, right? And so this is, I think, that tension between this topic, right, that has some specificity but some extreme broadness to it. I mean, in terms of how do we decode in specific instances, but how do we decode over the years? And there may be, you maybe shouldn't take up offense, for the 11th time if this has happened, right? Because still the intent was good, but there may be a real conversation that occurs between the two of you about how do we do things moving forward? Because this hurts me over and over again, even though you're being inoffensive, right? And where do we make adjustments? Right. And so I think that that is probably a part of this conversation for people as well.
That's right. And that's another whole conversation. And it's a worthy conversation, because if you said to me, you know what, this has happened 37 times. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's something going on here.
Yeah.
Your wife is not wanting to engage you on a weekend away for some reason, so to speak. I mean, there's something going on. This is now not just her serving these two women. This is a convenient opportunity for her to avoid you. And the question is, hey, what did you do that has wounded her, has closed her off, or is she having an affair? I mean, there are any number of things you'd explore,
sure.
Not just suddenly.
Yeah, on that topic. But what I'm making the point is either way that this goes, right, whether it's the person who kind of continually does the quote-unquote offending. I mean, is there something eventually, because there's a pattern that's offensive about that, even though the intent is good and we need to address that. In the same way as we're talking about, do I keep taking up offense at the inoffensive, and what's that about? And I got to address it on my, my side, right? Or collaboratively, as well. I'm just trying to, again, make...
Oh, no. It's exactly what I want you to do. That's why I have you co-host this, because I want you to ask these questions to make sure that the listener, who's probably asking the same thing. I mean, technically, those 37 things in and of themselves, each one is not technically offensive. Let's just say the scenarios are all kind of similar, and she's trying to, there's nothing that she's really done inherently immoral or evil. But if it's been done 37 times, now there's something else that's going on there. And it may not necessarily be offensive, but it is clearly a problem that there's something about their connection as a husband and wife that there's not reciprocity here. If it's all one-sided, I mean, it's the other side of the equation where the guy's working all the time. He's working 60 hours a week. He doesn't spend any time with his wife, and he is, just out there. Now, yep. Now, technically, he says, well, I'm making money, I'm not seeing other women, I'm doing all this. So he goes through his little mantra there of self-justification, but you know what? When you unpack it, you and I both know there's something going on there.
Yeah. And in the same instance, back to your somewhat silly example in the beginning, if mom, no matter what pants you put on every day, she made you change your pants for 3 straight years every single day, right? I mean, what's going on there, right? I mean, whether it's control, whether it's I am going to mother him, right? These types of things. I mean, these are the from the mundane to the meaningful. How are we going about the topics that we address on a consistent basis inside the marriage, right? I mean, on the one hand, you say, look, she just has my best interest at heart, but if she's doing it constantly, right, mm-hmm. even though there's no offensive intent behind it, but it continually annoys you, it's got to be talked about.
Well, right? Exactly. And I mean, but the way it gets framed is, hey, look, I know you're not trying to be offensive. I know your heart. I know the intent here, but this has been going on now for several months or, several years, and we got to kind of just make some adjustments here. I'm probably not going to do X, Y, Z, or I'm going to do X, Y, Z, but let's come up with a creative alternative, this win-win. You know, I may not clean as much as you want clean, and you're asking me to clean, and, you know, the truth is I'm probably not going to be as domestically clean as you are, but we're at a point in our life where we can afford someone coming in and cleaning. You know, so let's hire someone to do that. I mean, coming up with some creative alternatives here without communicating the other person, I'm sick and tired of you. You've offended me one too many times. I'm done with this relationship. I'm finished. I'm worn out. That's not where you need to go. But at the same time, there needs to be an honest discussion. We need to kind of do this dance a little bit differently here. And maybe we need a third party to help us sort that through. It's not a major issue, but it's these Song of Solomon talks about the little foxes that get into the vineyard. And Solomon is saying it's not the major things that will undermine, you know, most relationships. It's the little fox that gets into the vineyard and eats it away over a period of time. All these little things, they just, you know, it's death by a thousand, you know, paper cuts, that kind of a thing. And so it's important that we say, hey, we're not being dismissive of the importance of these little things, because as you point out, if this has been going on for a long time, it's the little foxes that are going to ruin the vineyard. So we've gone off a little bit on the margin there, but it was very important to go over there. So I hope the listener understands, hey, we hear you if this has been going on for a long time, but you've got to address it without labeling this as offensive, because you're not going to win the case there. Instead, you just need to say, hey, this is painful to me. This hurts me. This frustrates me. I'm getting angry. We need to talk about this. We need to do our relationship differently. And if I bring this up, are you going to feel unloved and disrespected? Can we have a conversation about this? And I'm not asking you to make 100% change. I'm willing to look at some things I need to do. Can we meet each other halfway?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, as you mentioned, Song of Solomon, I think you also kind of have an example, you know, from the Pharisees and taking up offense that I think is important for people to hear.
Well, now this is the other side of the equation, that in this case, this husband did not take up offense in the face of his wife's inoffensive behavior. She was trying to manage the retail shop as best she could and accommodate those two ladies, and it is what it is, and it happened. Life happens. But there are some people who, in fact, are offended by the inoffensive. And the great illustration of this comes in the Bible, in the Gospel of Matthew 15:12. You want to read that text right there, Jonathan?
Matthew 15:12. Then the disciples came and said to Jesus, "Do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this statement?"
Do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this statement? You know, you stop and think about this. We who are Christ followers, I mean, he who knew no sin. I mean, Hebrews says he knew no sin. Even Jesus, in this unbelievable moment, says, "Who among you accuses me of sin?" I mean, we talk about the sinless Son of God, and that he was perfect, and that there was nothing wrong with him. I mean, he was tempted in all things, yet without sin, Hebrews says. So we who are Christ followers say, yeah, he's the sinless Son of God. He's the perfect one, the perfect sacrifice for us. So now you stop based on that. You think to yourself, okay, so now the Pharisees were offended by the perfect Son of God. The Pharisees were offended by the sinless Son of God. I mean, the point is, this was their issue. Clearly, this is a Pharisaical mindset that's self-righteous, it's judgmental, and it's angry. Jesus, in fact, was not offensive. This was the Pharisees' problem. And if you take that same scenario with this husband, you know, and the same thing that we talked about, all the things that set that up, the one-time trip to Israel and the woman who's pregnant not wanting to stand on her feet, and so she would like some time off. And so the mother says, okay, or the manager, I mean, I'll take care of everybody and I'll work, and then we can't go to Michigan skiing with my husband. I mean, can't you just see the other scenario where the guy says, I can't believe you signed off on those ladies. You knew I wanted to go skiing. You know what? You don't care. You don't care about what is important to me. The bottom line is, I don't get any respect in this household. You know, you're putting your career ahead of me. You do it every time. You know, and I have to just be honest with you. You're not doing a very good job. you know, you could have managed the situation much better than you did. Okay, so now where's that one going to go?
Mm-hmm. I think I and the listener know where it's going to go.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I may be overstating the case, but not too far off, because you and I have been doing this counseling for many years, and this is what happens. And so now he is hurt, he is frustrated, angry, and he's taken up offense over what we've already established in and of itself is not offensive behavior. Doesn't mean that it's painless. It just means that it's not truly offensive. But it's pharisaical. It's pharisaical. Did you not know that the Pharisees are offended by what you had to say? You know, and I think of Mary and Martha, the sisters, and their brother Lazarus died. Most of us know that story. And Jesus knows that he was sick. And Jesus knew that basically he wasn't going to get well and he was going to die. And he doesn't show up on time, so to speak. And when he finally does arrive, Lazarus has died and Lazarus is in the tomb. And in this situation of that family, there's just a lot of care and a lot of concern for each other. And so Jesus is very close with this family. He's very close. He wept over Lazarus. So there's a closeness with Mary and Martha. There was a closeness with Lazarus. And earlier, we read of another situation where Mary is seated at Jesus' feet listening to him. And Martha's in the kitchen doing all this work. And she says to Jesus, the sinless, perfect Son of God, "Do you not care? Do you not care?" I mean, she's almost offended at Jesus again and claiming by the question, "You don't care. You don't care. I'm doing all this work here, and Mary's not doing a thing. Jesus," and you could even say, and she must have been ashamed later, and because it got included, I wonder if she told John the Apostle, "Don't include that. Please, John, don't include that." And he did. He did. And of course, the truth is, she probably said, "No, put it in there." What a shameful moment. The perfect Lord of Lords, the King of Kings, the perfect Son of God. When you look into the eyes of Jesus, you see the Holy One of Israel. "And I said to him, 'He does not care.'" John, put it in there so all humanity can see that we can be very pharisaical, we can be very judgmental, we can be very self-righteous, we can be claiming that people don't care, we can be claiming that people are unloving, when the truth is, that's not the case. You can claim your husband's very unloving, but would he in fact die for you if a man came into the house and attempted to murder you? And Jesus Christ said, "No greater love has a man than this, that he lay down his life for his friend." And yet, because your husband isn't sentimental and as romantic as you, you say he doesn't love you. And you're offended when he's a good-hearted, good-willed man who is the way he is, and he's been that way since first grade. He's quiet, withdrawn. He doesn't, you know, talk about his feelings. But he would literally die for you. And yet you're offended, and your girlfriends are offended over the fact that he is not who you want him to be. Mom and I were talking, John, this week about how many women we know married to godly, wise, loving guys, and the women are very upset with him, and some have even threatened divorce. And you think, what's going on? And of course, the flip side of this, some men out there resent, and Colossians says, "Husbands, do not be embittered against your wives." They're resentful, they're angry, they're bitter, they're offended over this woman who all she's trying to do is care, love. She's trying to think of the family unit. Everything she does is motivated by love, by virtue. There's no ill will. There's no evil intent. This was the mistake my dad made earlier. My mom was just an absolutely phenomenal woman. Grammy JJ just was a good-willed, good-spirited, no vile. She just was a good, wonderful human being. But my dad misread my mom's attitudes earlier in marriage, just completely failed to decode, and was angry and offended over things that had no factual offense in it. So the challenge for us on the other side of this equation is, if we are saying my spouse is offensive, bottom line, I just have to ask you, brother to brother, brother to sister, is that really factual? Would three pastors and three judges say that your spouse is in fact offensive? Again, we're not minimizing the fact that Martha was doing all the work, you know? And we're not minimizing the fact that Jesus said things that were hard for people to hear, you know, that there are sayings that, you know, he made that, you know, made it very difficult for the listeners at the time. You must eat my body and drink my blood. And they thought he was speaking cannibalistic. He said some things hard to, for them to hear, and some disciples left him. And there are things that are said in marriages that are hard. Maybe your spouse has spoken the truth to you, and you could take up offense, but you know what? It was the truth. They didn't say something that was untrue. They just spoke the truth, and they spoke it in love. But your lack of teachability, your self-righteousness, now you claim offense. And you see this quite often when there's adultery going on. The person who's the adulterer takes up offense over the person who's asking questions like, well, where were you? Or, you know, I see this text to this person. You're snooping. You have no, and they go off on this person, highly offended, when the truth is they just simply don't want to deal with the reality of their need to personally change. Mm-hmm. So any questions that come to you at this point?
No, I think it captured it well. And, you know, obviously we drifted to the margins, as you said, with some of these issues. I mean, I think it's a complicated and yet simple topic at the same time. But this is the issue that, you know, I address in counseling all the time, right? I mean, again, to go back to that phrase in the beginning, have you taken up offense where none was intended? Do you easily take up offense where none was intended? I mean, I use this phrase all the time because it so easily happens with what I sit with clients, and it so easily happens in my own life, right? I mean, this happens to all of us. Mm-hmm. And how do we deal with it? How do we become more mature around the issue and addressing the issues that are tough, that are hurtful, that are painful, addressing where we are wrong, addressing where we think the other person is wrong, right? But then I think also just letting some of this stuff go, just letting some of this stuff go, right? And so I mean, again, I always learn something, you know, when I hear you teach, and I trust that the listeners will have as well as you've gone through these examples.
Well, we'll leave that question with you. Are you the decoder or are you the Pharisee? It's as simple as that. Are you the decoder? And I was thinking, as you were just saying there, Jonathan, one of the things that I've learned through the years saying to people, you know, you can't tell people what their motive is. Unless they tell you what the motive is, you can't really tell that. I mean, it's very difficult to determine motive. That's internal. You know, you can look at circumstances, you can look at actions. And part of this decoding thing is letting go of this judgment of the other person's motive. I know why you did what you did. Truth is, no, you don't. Not unless they tell you. Very unlikely. I mean, it's very unlikely that you know the motive. So I've tried to stay away from that. So part of that decoding is you don't try to, you know, impugn motive. Instead, just look at the actions and then say to yourself, you know what? I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. If anything, I'm going to conclude they have goodwill. I'm certainly not going to go toward the side of ill will. I'm going to decode that they're not trying to be unloving. They're not trying to be disrespectful. There's virtue here. There's not vice. And I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and trust the spirit of my spouse, even though I feel hurt, frustrated, and angry at this moment.
Well, as always, trust it was meaningful to you. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Please share it, as always, with those that you think could benefit from it. We'll see you next week. Take care.
You've been listening to the Love and Respect podcast. For more information and additional products, go to loveandrespect.com and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Join Emerson and Jonathan next week for another episode.